You're listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast with James Creviston and Luke LaCoy.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to the Clean Comedy Podcast. This week's episode is going to be a crossover episode with the Comedypreneur Show. We have my interview with Al Martin of Broadway Comedy Club, and he has a book, he did it his way, about running and owning comedy clubs in New York. He has some great insights into not only what it takes to run a comedy club, the future of comedy clubs, the future of comedy, and future comedy in New York, around the world, due to COVID pandemic, all that stuff. We just want to say, no matter what you're doing, no matter how you're feeling right now, keep your chin up, be happy. Comedy is coming back little by little. I know that Flappers announced they're doing drive-in comedy. I know the Improv in Orange County is doing drive-in comedy. There's a lot of people doing drive-in comedy. So we're getting closer and closer, creeping towards things coming back to normal. So thanks for listening to us. Luke, say, you want to shout out something?
Hi, I'm Luke LaCoy, and I approve this message.
So now that everything is done, we should be back on the grind and getting ready to get out there and get to comedy. Don't forget to check out comedypreneur.com or check out the YouTube. There's a lot of good content that I'm putting out on both of those sites, and things are going well. So, Luke, be safe, be happy, and you guys listen to this great episode with Al Martin of Broadway Comedy Club for the crossover Queen Comedy Podcast Comedypreneur Show episode. Here we go. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Comedypreneur Show. Today, I have an amazing guest, a really funny guy, a really smart guy, probably has done more for comedy in New York than anybody else. His story is amazing. You have to check out his book. I did it on a dare. I have it on a Kindle, so I'm not holding it up here for you guys, but how he created comedy in New York. And he owns the Broadway Comedy Club. I've been there. I love the club. It's probably one of my favorite places. And I will definitely go back when all this is over and we can open back up. But please welcome the very talented, the very cool, the very funny, by the tone of his book, Mr. Al Martin.
Al, welcome. Thank you. How do I outlive that? The great introduction. And I am prepared.
Yes.
Is it backwards? I think it's coming out backwards, right?
It looks right to me, but that's cool.
Okay, cool. So did it on a dare.
Yeah, this is an amazing book because there's a lot to unpack in this story. All the things that you've been through, you started and you did stand up. You owned different clubs. I love the story about the neighbor who kept like calling on you every single night for that one club. I was like, how can comedy survive in New York if that happens that every single night? That's insane to me.
Well, it's unbelievable what goes on. Nobody really knows what truly goes on to get a business going. Now, New York has an interesting process. If you want to open up a restaurant or a bar, the first step in the process is you have to get at least 100 signatures from people in the neighborhood, okay? I'm sorry, I lost you there for one second. You have to get at least 100 signatures from people in the area. Once you get those 100 signatures, you then apply to the community board to let you become a part, you know, of the community. And the first phase of that is the liquor license committee. It's a separate committee just for a liquor license. And the ridiculous, you know, the people that have the time to be on these committees are not the people that know a lot about business. It's the people that possibly their entire lives might have worked for somebody, might have taken a lot of nonsense from people, and this is their way of getting a piece of power in this lifetime. And the questions, one question I got asked was, I understand your proposed menu has Nathan's hot dogs. Have you gotten permission from Nathan's to sell Nathan's hot dogs? Which, by the way, you could buy in any supermarket for $2 a package, you know? These are the questions that you would go through. And then the city of New York is set up, as you saw in the book, in a way where anybody can call 311 and voice a complaint about anything. So on any given night, at the community board meetings, you might have 20 businesses applying for a liquor license in a neighborhood. Out of those 20, probably 19 of them get turned down. So, and that's in one neighborhood. Imagine it all over the city. Now, at $5,000 a liquor license, you could just imagine the revenue that the state of New York is losing by allowing certain lunatics who have no idea what they're talking about to make these decisions.
Yeah, that's crazy.
Crazy. It's crazy. Well,
I love chapter 2 of your book, which is Al Martin's Golden Rules of Comedy. Now, the one rule that I laughed at right away, it's your first rule that you wrote. He or she who has the least going on in their life has the best chance to succeed. And
correct.
I'm split on this because I'm of the belief the more irons you have in the fire, the better chance of success you have in life. But can you explain that golden rule to me? Because I liked it. It made me laugh right away. But I get what you're saying.
Of course. Okay. So let's take two examples. A person that, and I have lived through these examples. I've seen them. There was a comedian that was trying to make it. He had a lifelong dream to be a comedian. His parents had a lifelong dream that he become a lawyer. So the two didn't quite match. So he became a lawyer to shut his parents up, and he became a really good lawyer. He was so successful that he worked for Donald Trump during the day in Atlantic City. So this is 20, 25 years ago when Trump had interests in Atlantic City. And during the day, he would be negotiating these high-powered deals with unions or contractors or whatever to get these casinos up and going. He would then helicopter back to New York and rush to my club, okay, to do a spot as a comedian, okay? And he would do 5 minutes, and part of his act was wearing a court jester's hat and telling, you know, old knock-knock jokes. So could you imagine as this guy during the day is going, I want these concessions from you on this and that and this. And then, you know, 3 hours later, he's standing in front of an audience, you know, doing stupid knock-knock jokes for no money, okay? And while he's working for Trump, he's probably making 250 grand a year. Who knows? So
wow.
Picture that guy. Now, he gets married. His wife says to him, I didn't marry a guy to stand in a comedy club with a court jester's hat. I married a lawyer. So now picture that guy with a wife, a mortgage, his wife got pregnant and a baby versus the guy who's sitting in the basement, you know, eating nachos all day, ordering dollar pizza with nothing to do. And his mother probably telling him, get the hell out of the house and do something with your life. You know? So when you really think about it, who's got more time and energy to put into this? And it's the guy with nothing. It's ironic that the guy with nothing to do has more time and an easier decision than the person that's actually successful in life.
Now, do you think that that successful person with motivation, because they already have the motivation and success in life, could be more successful because they already are familiar with the path to success, whether it be not, even if it's not in comedy, whereas the other person who's more apt to sit in their basement and just eat pizza or nachos or whatever, they may not have the drive to even that successful of a comedian.
You know, there are some people that were very successful in their daytime lives and were able to, you know, transform it, shall we say, into pursuit of stand-up comedy. There are many lawyers actually in stand-up comedy. That I know one of the top pediatric dentists in the city is also a successful comedian, and he's actually funny and good, and he had the unbelievable energy to be able to do both sides of the coin. He's written one-man shows, so, you know, it can be done. But I will say that his path to doing it did not involve a wife and kids until he was already successful.
Gotcha.
Because that, you know, think about it. You're married, you got a kid. Those married, one draw of energy. A successful daytime business, another draw of energy. A kid, another draw of energy. There's only so much to the pie. But he, and I find whoever does make it, does not have the encumbrances. If that's not really a great word when you talk about a wife and a kid, but they don't have the distractions, for lack of a better word, than someone that's just got nothing really going on in their lives and they can really pursue this full blast.
I agree. And the other one, the other rule that I really liked is the lighter you travel and the closer you are to a metropolitan area, the better an opportunity you have to make it as a comedian. Now, with what's going on with the pandemic and all this stuff, what do you think the end result is going to be? Because I just read an article about the UK that said 70% of their comedy clubs are going to close and never come back. What do you think is going to happen because of this? Like, your business is being impacted, obviously.
Oh, of course.
What do you think the future comedy is for that kind of stuff?
Well, I think New York has got a double whammy. Not only do you have to worry about COVID, but the perception of New York now is that back of the 1970s, that it's not a safe place to travel to. So besides people think, oh, where am I going to go visit in the world? Well, I think for a year or two, people aren't going to go visit anywhere. You can see that by the airline business. But let's say in a year or two, they do decide to travel. They might say to themselves, whoa, I remember the rioting and the looting and all the and the release of people from the jails and bail reform. New York, the cops are quitting in droves. I remember that. I don't want to subject my family to that. So, yeah, besides the fear of COVID, you're dealing with a fear of crime and the perception of crime. And I, for one, do not want to go back to the 1970s to where you would walk down you know, it's funny, you know, sometimes I would walk down Times Square and I'd say, oh my God, Disneyland is here and Bubba Gump's. What's happened to the Times Square of my youth where you could buy porno flicks and nunchucks and knives and, you know, Bruce Lee films and all that. But, you know, now that you're facing going back to it I'm in my early 60s, I don't want any part of that crime stuff, you know? So it's going to be very challenging. I do suspect at the end of the day that there will be some carnage. I don't know who it'll be. It's like that game Musical Chairs, you know, you go round and round and sooner or later there's not a chair. So if you had 15 or 12 or whatever the amount of comedy clubs there were in Manhattan and some of them were struggling as it is, now with even less people living in the city, because there's a boatload of people that are leaving Manhattan. Yeah. So you add that and less tourists to fill the seats. I think it's just a matter of time before one of them goes under. And, you know, it also could be personal decisions. You know, you've got a couple, at least three or four or five of the comedy club owners in New York are in their 50s, 60s, 70s, and one is even in his 80s. And they might decide, well, who needs this crap anymore? You know, I've got to deal with, you know, crime. I've got to deal with a government bureaucracy. And it's amazing because you would think during the time of COVID, they would make things easier for businesses in New York. They came out yesterday with a list of regulations that would blow your mind for outdoor dining. And you have to say to yourself, what are you kidding? You know, I mean, you know, cut a little slack as your one reliable tax base around businesses are trying to figure it all out, you know, and they've got inspectors running around, you know, the governor saying, you know, three strikes and your liquor license is being revoked. You know, in a lot of ways, I'm glad I'm in my early 60s rather than be in my 40s, you know, starting out or in the middle of doing this. It's horrific what's going on.
So how is Broadway staying afloat during this process? Are you guys doing like Zoom shows or online shows and stuff like that? How are you staying afloat?
Well, we tried the Zoom show and I just don't like the concept for stand-up comedy. Now, we are working on some productions. We have a beautiful baby grand piano in one of our showrooms in the upstairs room, and it's a cabaret space. And I think Zoom probably could fit very well for singing, you know, for singers, because they don't really rely on an audience like stand-up comedy does. So I think that singing can be something that could be useful, you know, and Zoom has its benefits, but I just don't, I'm not getting it. You know, some people, I don't know if they're just being delusional, trying to just grasp at any straw to say that Zoom is, you know, there's one club that's doing comedy in the park, you know, and it's free. So great concept, but you've got to pay the comedians. And let's say you circled a certain part for your show. What's to stop somebody from standing right outside the circle and watching your show? I mean, you're not charging for it. You can't serve drinks. And you're paying the comedians, which is noble, but I'm not quite getting, you know, maybe they're trying to build a fan base of local support. But I think people forget about that stuff real quick, especially when the winter comes in New York. How are you doing those kind of shows? So, you know, it's a challenge. And, you know, actually the my time has been taken up with trying to get the club ready, the physical club ready for opening, whenever that might be, trying to think ahead as to what will be needed to have on board, whether it's, you know, Plexi, whether it's hand sanitizing stations, UV, ultra rays, you know, Star Trek shit, you know, whatever we're going to need to open up the clubs. And in addition to that, the book has taken a lot of my time. It's selling well. I've been doing a lot of interviews. Someone actually was so fascinated by the book and loved the story that they're now going to make it in. They're writing a screenplay for it.
Nice.
And it's going to be pitched. And, you know, it's sort of the Rocky Balboa meets stand-up comedy thing.
Love it.
And someone else has gotten such an interest in it that they're going to try to pitch it as a documentary, if not a documentary, a docuseries. But they definitely see something in that. So, you know, those are some pretty good things. And I'm working on some other digital projects. So hopefully, you know, we keep the brand out there. But I don't want to keep the brand out there with subpar quality stuff.
Agreed. So yeah. You mentioned paying comedians. There's a kind of movement that I've kind of heard about through the grapevine about comedians wanting to get paid, especially out here in LA. I don't know how it works in New York, but in LA, a lot of times comedians perform for free and clubs make money off ticket sales and food and drinks and all that stuff like that. Is there an adversity for club owners to pay comedians? And do you think there could be a way for comedians to get paid? Obviously not for open mics, but like for shows, like I come do 5 minutes, I make $5. If I do 10 minutes, I make $10, something like that. Is there a way to do that for non-established comedians? Do you feel like that's a possible future?
Well, here's how it works in New York.
Okay.
And I think New York is paying considerably more than LA. Last I had heard a few years back, is it still $35 or $40 for a spot at the three or four major clubs, the Improv, Comedy Store?
I've performed at the Comedy Store. I performed at Flappers. I have not performed at Improv or anything like that. But I've never been paid for any of those shows.
Okay, so let me also differentiate. There are two types of shows out there, at least in New York, and I'm pretty sure out in LA as well, especially in the clubs that have multiple showrooms like the Comedy Store, and I think the Improv out there. And I think Flappers might have two showrooms, right?
Yeah, they do. They do, correct. Yeah.
So there, one show is what we call our house show. That is where we have the top comics of New York regularly performing. And on a weeknight, they'll get $25. On a weekend, they'll get $80 a set. That's our regular show. And these comics go from club to club in Manhattan. And if they have 3-4 spots a night on a weekend, they can make $300-$400, something like that, you know? So that's one type of show. Now, we also have in our multiple showrooms that we have, Broadway has two. Then I also have Greenwich. We also have producers that will take space from us. Our basic deal is they get the drink, you know, they get the bar. I mean, they get the box office and we get the drinks. Now, among those people, it's a wide range of whatever financial deal they work out with comics. If they get really strong comics that have strong TV credits, those comics are going to request payment, you know, and get it probably. If it's somebody starting out and somebody newer, you know, it's what I call the law of supply and demand, and what the market will bear. If you're a strong enough comic and you feel that you deserve to get paid something, you can ask for that. Now, that doesn't mean that the producer is going to pay you. You know, one of the things that we saw, and it was mentioned in the book, is we had something in New York called the Comedy Coalition a number of years back in the early 2000s, where the comics tried to get together and demand that their pay be increased because cab fare went up, this went up, everything went up. And, you know, it had been a while since they got a raise. And the ironic thing was that at the end of the day, when that happened, when the comics got a raise, it only helped a few of the people on the top of the ladder. The ones that were expected to go out and be on a picket line were the ones that did not benefit at all from that because they weren't at the level to make that money. So, you know, it becomes for a club owner, it really, it'll help a few comics at the top of the range. But the people on the bottom of the range that are not yet ready or, you know, not ready for prime time, it's not going to help them because the club owner is going to say, well, if I'm being forced to pay $50 a set to somebody, I'm going to pay it to the top guy rather than the guy just starting out. So now you get nothing. So, you know, you have to kind of understand. And I mean, I'm maybe a little old school. I came from the range that if you're going to work any of these clubs in the major cities, you're doing it for some kind of exposure. You're doing it to hopefully get seen, make contacts, develop friendships that later on, as we talk about in the book, will be beneficial to you. Right. Now, if you're living in, you know, some faraway place, you know, that is not near any agents or managers, then the only reason you're in it is to make some money, you know, down the road. So you should fight and get every dollar you can when you're working at those road rooms. But, you know, when you think about the rooms in the major metropolitan areas, considering the massive rent that, you know, which is going to change now because of COVID, I think, but the rents that they're paying, the liability insurance, you know, I probably pay more in liability insurance than a lot of people make a year in a salary. That's how crazy it is in New York, you know? And so it's rough to get those things going. It's ironic because as I mentioned it in the book, I was on the club owner side, but years earlier, I was the last vice president of the PCA, which was known as the Professional Comedians Association. So I was on the other side of the coin fighting for, you know, comedians and, you know, things that they, and there's a lot of abuses, you know, in these new talent showcases or better known as the bringer shows, you know, you have some comic bring in 30 out of the 50 people in the audience. And then the producer puts them up last because they want to keep the audience in the room the whole time. That's terrible. And that's unfair. And that's exploitive in my opinion. But, you know, these are individual case situations and it's hard to really, you know, put a broad brush on it.
Right. But I mean, if you had a new comedian, so say I have no TV credits, I am good, I have a good tight five. Would you be willing to pay that comedian $5 for 5 minutes and you know, $8 for 8 minutes or whatever it is?
There
you know
are, saying?
Like
there
that seems fair.
And I think that's going to be happening. That opportunity without any organized request is going to start happening because of the massive losses that a lot of businesses have taken. You might see some, you know, playing with their budgets a little bit, and they might say, you know, we do 4 headliners or 5 headliners on a show. Maybe, you know, instead of 15-minute spots, we should do 3 guys with 20 or 25-minute spots and, you know, fill it in with a couple of guys that are gals that are not as new and, you know, give them $10 spots or $15 spots. So you might start to naturally see that happening because it's a whole new world out there, really. I mean, you know, everything is sort of new and, you know, we just don't know where it's all leading to.
Yeah. And that's the big thing is I think that like in LA, especially a lot of spots, a lot of comedians, because there is a lot of comedians, right? That there's more comedians than there is spots. So clubs don't have to pay, right? They don't have to pay somebody because they know that the comedians want the stage time. But it should be a more symbiotic relationship where if I felt like, hey, this club's going to pay me $5 to perform 5 minutes, I'm still getting 5 minutes, or this club's going to pay me nothing and give me 5 minutes, I'm probably going to go to the club that pays me $5 to do 5 minutes. And I might be, not that I, not me personally, but more comedians might be willing to do a better set or maybe even work a little bit harder to have a better set for that. Do you feel that?
Well, of course. I mean, this is what's called capitalism,
right?
And supply, supply and demand. It's a very basic old concept and it's nothing new. If I'm a club owner and I have an opportunity to pick up a solid comedian, maybe not at the top of the realm, for a guy, let's look at a Saturday night. If I've got to pay a guy $80, but I can get two or three people to do the same amount of time that would be glad to be on that primetime show, and I can get them for, you know, $15 or, you know, for 10 minutes or something like that, or 10 minutes, $10, whatever it is, it's beneficial to the young comedian because now all of a sudden they're going from a 2:30 a.m. spot on a weeknight, you know, to Saturday night prime time. So, you know, and it's better for the club owner because they're actually able to, you know, penny pinch, for lack of a better word. So, yeah, this is economics 101. It's capitalism. Yeah. And it probably can work. But, you know, but also every club has its own way of looking at it. You know, I look at it that way. I look at the, you know, people don't think $5 is a lot, but if you have a perfect example, when you think that you're in a weird kind of economy like we are now with 11% unemployment, let's say they told me to reopen tomorrow. So now you're faced with a situation where you've got five comics on a show, 5 days a week. That's 25 spots a week. And then, you know, 10 spots, you know, on a Friday and 10 on a Saturday or something like that. You have 45 spots a week. Now, let's say, let's just make it conservative, 40 spots a week. And you're only increasing it by $5 a spot. You know, 40 times 5 is $200 times 52 weeks a year. You're at, now this is Al Martin math, a lot of people like to call it. But now that's 10 grand a year out of a club owner's pocket with no real way to recoup that because your admission prices are, we're stuck for the next few years. They ain't going up, you know, yeah. And drink prices are probably in the metropolitan areas stretched out pretty thin. You know, I'm in Manhattan, you know, and we get $9 for a beer. So when I get a tourist in from Ohio and they go, $9 for a beer. I go to the VFW hall and I pay $3.50 or something, you know, for a Coors Light or some, you know, so you can't go much higher there. So you're really in a tough spot. So, you know, and listen, I'm not against comics getting paid, you know. Obviously, if it's not for comics, we're not even open. But you're going to have to try to make some tough decisions. And you know, whether people want to hear that or not. I mean, so you see the impact of just $5 a spot. $10 a spot now makes it $20,000 out of a club owner's pocket. You know, so you're talking a substantial amount of money with no way to really recoup that. I can see if you could say, hey, you know, maybe we'll run an hour a day without air conditioning. you know, but you can't do that. There's all these fixed expenses. Insurance don't go away, electric don't go away, your managers get paid a certain amount of money, so it's not easy. It's not easy.
I like it. I like your attitude. I like that you are, as a club owner, you're not adversarial to the comedians, you're right? You're not saying, well, no, if they want stage time, I'm giving them stage time and, you know, they can suck an egg or whatever. I like that you have that outlook of like, look, we're providing – comedians are providing the entertainment, we're providing the location. If we can make something work that benefits everybody, that's my goal.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I love that. That's so good. And what is your biggest tip for a comedian who wants to break in? Like if I move to New York tomorrow and I want to perform at Broadway, what are you looking for somebody to come perform there?
Well, the first thing I always like is someone who's humble, someone who doesn't get in the way. What do I mean by that? You know, don't come into a club a minute before you're set, okay? Sure. Check in. First of all, you got to be stressed. Where are you? It's a minute before your spot, and I got 100 people in the room, and I'm wondering where you are. Then once you come in and check in, you go wandering off somewhere, or you announce 5 seconds before the MC is bringing you up, oh, I've got to go to the bathroom. You know, you really, you know, in other words, don't stand at the entrance to the showroom where waiters and waitresses are coming in and out with service. Don't go to the bartender in the middle of the height of the trying to get out the drinks and say, can I get a Diet Coke, please? You know, in other words, get the fuck out of the way. Come in, do your spot, be nice, you know. And then, you know, once you've done your spot and you want to hang out, fine, you know, and things slow down, fine. But don't be annoying. That's the easiest thing a comic can do. Be humble, you know. Don't call me every time I give you a spot. Every time I give you a spot, don't call me and then call me back 5 minutes later and say, can you change it? Or don't call me, you know. Once in a while, everybody gets a better gig. I get it. You know, we're a showcase room. We're paying you $75, $80, whatever it is. Okay, you get a gig for $500 in a row. I get it. But when that happens every week, what are you breaking my balls? And then you're the one calling me to book you. You know, I got to take you off the website. You know, I got to make 200 changes. You know, and then also, if you're a producer and you're producing a show in my venue, don't bother me every 5 minutes with a change in the lineup of your flyer. Or can you put up this flyer? One comic left the show and I got another one that's going up instead. Nobody gives a shit who's on your flyer anyway. To be quite honest with you, nobody gives a shit, okay? You can put comedian's name Joe Blow, nobody would even notice it. You know what I'm saying?
I love
it. There you
go. No, I love it. That's the thing is, I am big on having comedians, like when I produce shows, have them come 15, 20 minutes early so I know where everybody is. I can brief them, order, all that stuff. So, yeah. And I see that too. It happens in LA. Comedians run in the door. Oh, I got to go to the bathroom. Yeah, well, you're supposed to be up next. You know, now the MC has to switch the lineup on the fly. Then the guy who was going to go after them now is going.
You see it all day long, right?
All day long.
You know. And these are the ones that shoot themselves in the foot. They think they're invincible and they're great. There's 100 comedians that are great out there.
Yep.
And, you know, I know about other clubs. I'll take a guy. See, one guy here is 100%, 100%. And the other guy is 80%. Give me the 80% comic anytime if he's not a pain in the ass. I'd rather deal with people that are not pains in the asses. Simple as that.
I love it. I love it. Well, thank you so much for your time. Where can people find the book? Where can they find more about you and how to get, you know, how to get that book get in contact with you?
It's called Did It on a Dare, How I Built a Comedy Empire in 30 Short Years. That's the key part. Everybody says Did It on a Dare. The other part is funny. 30 Short Years. It's available on Kindle and on Amazon Kindle. It's available in paperback. It will be available soon in bookstores. If you're super lazy, it's available on audiobooks, on iTunes. I'll be doing book signings as soon as my clubs open up in maybe 2026 or something like that. And we'll hope to do a Friars Club book signing party coming up. So look for hopefully good things later in the year with a screenplay on the book. And check us out when we reopen at Broadway Comedy Club and GreenwichVillageComedyClub.com.
Perfect. And are you, just a quick question, are you narrating the audiobook?
No, you know, a lot of people ask me that. And I did the first chapter of it. And I said, you know, to get the intonation right. So we got a guy who does a lot of voiceover work. But we got someone that has that good gruff Al Martin sound to him, you know.
Good.
So,
okay.
You know, New York accent. And, we pulled it off, I think, and he did a great job.
Perfect, because I was gonna say it'd be so good in your voice. Like I could hear your voice when I'm reading the book, anyway. So it's like, all right, I would love to hear your voice as.
Yeah, I should have stuck with it, but I was a little too self-conscious, you know, and I said, maybe someone else can do a better job.
Perfect. Thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate
it. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Thanks, everybody, for listening. And don't forget to like, subscribe, and have a wonderful day.